Welcome to the 18th episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu podcast. In this episode, we're going to interview Linda Sandvik about Code Club. We've also got another time-saving tip in the form of a GUI love, and we're going to read your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Tony, and joining me this evening are a triumvirate of geeks looking at me confusedly. First up is Alan.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Excellent. And Mark is here as well.
Hello.
And so is Laura.
Hiya.
Excellent. Laura.
Yes?
Have you been doing anything interesting in the last couple of weeks you might like to share with us?
I backed my first Kickstarter project.
Ooh. Did you really?
I did.
What did you back?
The Shoreditch Village Hall Kickstarter.
Ah, yes, I saw that. And you don't live anywhere near Shoreditch?
No. So originally, I just backed it with £1, which is the minimum, so I could then justify tweeting it to other people. Because, yeah, I don't live in London. But
You couldn't tweet it without paying a pound?
No, it just seemed a bit...
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So, but I actually went to the Monkey Gra conference, which the company organise.
Right.
And I figure that next year it's probably going to be there, in which case if I go to it, I will make use of the facilities.
Right.
So then I backed it with £25.
And what do you
get for
that? Which
means my name is now on the awesome wall.
Oh.
Or will be on the awesome wall.
Isn't that the thing that Jeremy Clarkson does?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
That's the cool wall.
Is it just
not
as good
inside
this building that shows
the cafe.
All the people? Oh, that's a really cool idea.
I think so too.
The ego wall, as
yes.
You should call it.
No, it's the awesome wall.
You're not a stranger to having your name in print after giving someone money, are you?
No, Richard Herring.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you said there was something familiar about it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I get my name in the programme.
Cool.
Excellent. Alan.
I received two Kickstarter things.
Ooh.
This month. One was that piece of metalwork over there, which is now my wallet.
Okay.
And the other one is an Ouya.
It's a what?
It's a games machine, Tony. A game.
Okay, yeah.
It's a thing you play.
It's fun.
Ah, yes.
Remember
fun.
That? Fun.
Employing your time in a profitless and nonsensical manner.
It's basically an Android games console thing with a couple of controllers.
What's the wallet thing?
That. It's a metal wallet for holding
Alan points
cards.
I'll hold it close to the microphone.
That's better. It's a metal
sounds great.
Thing. So rather than having a big, because as a bloke, I usually have a wallet in my pocket, and it's a giant bulky thing.
Right.
And this thing is a little metal thing, and it holds all your cards together really.
What if you
nice
have cash as well?
You can't put cash in it.
You don't put cash in it.
Okay.
So you have to hold that separately.
I'm like royalty, yeah. Mark. I don't carry cash.
Right. Okay.
As it's metal, does it stop RFID chips?
Yes, it does.
Ah, so you can't get through the barriers on the underground with it?
Well, you take your card out.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Mm. Too much like hard work.
Yeah. Or you could do what that guy did who dropped his Oyster card in acetone.
Oh, yes. Dissolve it away.
Yeah, yes. That would be good.
Mm. Turn it into a wand, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that was the idea.
What about you, Mark?
I also got a Kickstarter. I got my my Rhino Shield for my phone. To stop it, so if I drop it on concrete, the glass won't break on the back.
Prove it.
And I also went to Download Festival.
Ah, yes. Yes. How was the pop festival?
It was a rock and metal festival.
Okay.
I should probably clarify there. Nothing to do with downloading, really.
Okay.
That's just a cool name.
But they use an at sign as
yes,
well.
Yes, I saw Iron Maiden and Rammstein and Slipknot and other such... Metally
beat combos.
Yeah.
Yes. Those. It was
I'm
very
sorry,
good.
Mark.
It was very good.
Excellent. And you caught the sun a little bit.
Yes. As I said, it took some chasing down, but yeah. I got it eventually.
Hasn't gone
net.
Down much since the last episode. I mean, that's all I'm...
Wow, he's had that for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Presumably. Oh, man.
Yeah, yes. You've been varnished
that's
every day.
Right.
Wow, it sounds like we've had a productive couple of weeks.
What have you been doing, Tony?
Oh, nothing of any interest whatsoever.
Okay, good. Let's get on with the show.
Joining us on the line is Linda Sandvik from Code Club. Hello, Linda.
Hi.
How are you doing this evening?
Pretty good, actually.
Excellent. Well, thank you for coming on the show to talk to us. Tell us, what is Code Club?
So Code Club is basically an after-school coding club. for children aged 9 to 11, and we send professional programmers as volunteers into the schools or libraries or other venues, and they take lessons that we've made and then teach the children how to program, because the government isn't.
That's awesome. How did it get started?
Well, we just started in April last year. There was a lot of talk in the media about how ITC curriculum in this country was rubbish, and in fact, they scrapped the ICT curriculum entirely. And of course, Eric Schmidt accused the UK of throwing away its digital heritage by not teaching computing. And yeah, a friend, Claire Sutcliffe, and I were at a pub, and we just decided that we could do something about this.
Excellent. All the best decisions are made in pubs. So how'd you get started?
Well, we got some friends together, and we started writing a few lessons. I'd read some, you know, sort of introduction to computer science programming books that were really boring, and I know that it can be really, really exciting and fun. That's why I do it. So that was like our focus from the very beginning, that it should be fun. We wrote some lessons together. We took them into 20 pilot schools, and then we did a lot of user testing with the kids, because we, Claire and I, both kind of come from the web world, where we're used to doing, you know, user testing and iteration. We kind of just used the same model for writing the lessons.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So what do your lessons teach? What's covered?
Well, we start off with Scratch. So Scratch is this amazing programming IDE language that was developed at MIT Media Lab at the Lifelong Kindergarten Group, specifically for teaching children how to program. And it's really nice and visual, and you can drag blocks of code together, and they fit together like a puzzle. You don't have to type anything, so it takes the whole syntax issue out of it. You don't get any nasty errors thrown in your face, error messages and such. So it's really nice. And yeah, we just mostly it's making games. All the kids that we talk to love playing games, and as we've discovered, most of them actually love making them as well.
So I expect that in the course of some of your lessons, you get a kid doing something you didn't expect. What's the coolest thing that you've seen someone in one of the lessons do?
Oh, they're just so creative. Scratch makes it really easy to adapt and make the game your own and change the different bits. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's incredible to see. Even though everyone starts off with the same instructions, they all have like completely different games by the end of the session, which is amazing. But I think the best moment for me in a code club was when one of the kids asked the volunteer, "So this program, Scratch, is that also done with programming?" And it's
just
like, yes.
That's the bit. That's when they really get it, isn't it? When you realize they can actually create. I have a vested interest. I have a 9-year-old daughter, and she's had a play with Scratch, and I've put her in front of it, and she's got a book. And I'd love for her to get involved with a club with other children, you know, people of her same age, and have some more structure to it. So how did you go about getting into schools? How did you approach them, and how did they respond?
Well, basically we tell the volunteer, so we have a sign up on our website where schools can sign up, and we try to find a volunteer for them, or if which is more often the case, a volunteer wants to do it, and we just tell them to contact the nearest school. We have the materials that they can present, and most schools are very open to it. They love it, obviously, because it's free, and they feel like they should be doing something with this computing thing that's been all over the media. Like, we didn't create the bus was already there.
Do you use the infrastructure that the schools already have, their own computers, or do you bring them along?
Yeah, how do you deal with that? The primary schools have computers. Not all of them have internet, but it's okay.
Oh. Wow.
We'll make do without.
So what do you do then if a school's just got, you know, a bunch of old computers not connected to the internet with a stock image? I assume most of them will be running Windows. How do you get them up and running with a Scratch environment?
Put Scratch on a USB stick and take it into the school. It hasn't been as difficult as I thought it would be.
Great.
So why is it so important to teach children these skills?
It's kind of like when we teach children how to read, we also teach them how to write. And we're teaching them how to use all the sort of software and applications, but not how it's made. And it seems very obvious to me, at least, that the people who know how computers work are going to be very much an advantage over the people who don't. Mm. Like, they're going to have just like a better idea of how to solve problems. Like, computers run our world, like, increasingly so, more and more every day, right? So,
yeah.
If you have an idea of how they work, you don't necessarily have to become a programmer. That's not what we want. But if you know how they work and what they can do and how they can make your life easier, you're gonna have a lot. You're gonna have a lot better time.
Okay,
so solving problems.
So Code Club focuses on children aged 9 to 11. Why that age range?
We had to start somewhere.
Yeah, fair answer.
So, I mean, we were two people. We had to start somewhere, and we figured at 9 they already have the reading skills and the like the numeracy skills. They know basic logic, so we wouldn't have to teach them that. Actually, some people are using our materials with younger kids, and it's going fine. It just takes a little bit more time. Like, they maybe can't finish each lesson in just 1 hour. But, and some of the kids, you know, they require help with just reading the instructions.
Right. How long? Yeah. So you say it's like an hour session and it's after school. How many sessions in, a course, and what's the outcome at the end of that?
So we have a term. A school term is like 8 to 10 weeks. It varies a bit. So we have a lesson every week for, you know, as long as we're keeping one term ahead of the schools that started. So the first schools that started in May last year, they've been doing it for a year, and we just keep producing materials so that they can
continue. Just one page ahead of them, are you?
Yeah, pretty much.
And so once they've learnt and got through making a simple game in Scratch, do you migrate them onto something else, or do you think Scratch
absolutely.
Is enough?
No, Scratch is not enough. It's a nice, gentle start. But after that, we go on to teaching how to make websites. So I think HTML is a very gentle introduction to writing your own commands, because browsers are very forgiving.
Yeah.
But then from HTML, we move on to Python, which is exciting. We can do some proper programming.
Is that still making websites with Python, or do you do...
No, making things, making games mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily websites. There's more than websites.
And so when you're using something like Python, obviously it's quite a leap to go from dragging and dropping lumps of code in something like Scratch to, you know, bashing the keyboard and typing in, you know, commands. And yeah, Python's fairly straightforward, but is that quite a leap for the children, or do you find they actually pick it up pretty easily?
They are so amazing. So we're just testing some Python app now. We haven't rolled it out to all the schools yet, but they just take to it. I think Python is a really good first language to learn, and it seems that the kids are just, yeah, they somehow get it. I've tried to teach JavaScript before, and I had not had the same results with that. So I don't know if it's the Python or if it's we have more experience now, but yeah, they really seem to love it. And we also just started sending out all the Raspberry Pis that Google and Raspberry Pi have given us to all the code clubs.
They gave you some?
Yeah, 4,000 of them.
Wow.
I didn't know there were 4,000 of them. Oh, wow. So do you send them out with, like, pre-installed, like, SD card with all your stuff on it or something?
Yeah. And then they have fun. It comes with, I think it's Debian, yeah. The version of Debian on, and they get to, you know, do some proper computing.
Excellent. So you started Code Club a year ago in May, so it's just over a year old now. How's it grown since you started?
Oh, well, when we first started it, we thought that we'd have like maybe 5 schools, maybe 20 by the end of the year, and we have like 860 something now.
Wow.
It's amazing.
That's pretty big.
So is that?
Yeah, the two of you must be very busy.
That's a lot of travel.
Yeah, we have hired a couple of more people.
So do you have like one volunteer teaching in each school, or do you have like several, like one volunteer covering doing code clubs in several different places? How does it sort of compare?
It really depends. Some schools have, you know, they have their one volunteer. Yeah. Other people who can't do it every week, which I understand, it's quite a big commitment. They go together and there'll be like 2 or 3 people doing it, like doing one code club together, but they, you know, take turn.
Yeah.
And then other schools, like the ICT teacher or the person who... It's not necessarily an ICT teacher, but they are the ones who know how the printer works. they will run one.
Right.
So we actually have quite a few teachers running it in school time, which is cool. A bit terrifying, really.
Yeah. So do they? I mean, what level of programming knowledge do they need? Does it just need someone who can teach from a worksheet, or do they actually have to know the programming principles that underlie it all?
Yeah, I think they do. I think, and if they know a curly brace language of some kind, then they're good to go.
I like that definition. That's good. I like that. I'm going to use that.
And Code Club's gone global this week, officially.
Yeah, last week, I think. it's all kind of blurred because it was the last year. Yeah, we just, you know, we put all our lessons up on GitHub.
Mm-hmm.
Hoping that people will take them and add to them, and so we can improve. And also people have been translating them into lots of different languages, which is amazing to see.
Wow.
And yeah, we had our first code club start in India last week.
Wow, cool.
Brilliant.
So that's exciting. Yeah, hopefully everyone can learn to program.
So on that subject, how do people... find out more? How do people get involved, or if they want to get in touch with their local school, where should they find out more about the code clubs?
So we're at Code Club on Twitter, as well as at Code Club World.
Mm-hmm.
We're Code Club on GitHub, and our website is codeclub.org.uk and codeclubworld.org.
Fantastic. Well, I certainly am going to take a look at this myself, but I wish you all the best, and thanks very much for coming on to talk to us, Linda.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Then.
Thanks very much. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And now it's time for some gooey love.
Super. Special.
And this week's gooey love is GP Rename.
What's that
it do, Tony?
It's a batch renamer for files.
Ooh, that sounds exciting.
It is. You point it at a directory of files and you can give it some parameters. It's a GUI program, so you've not got to worry about command line options and stuff. You just say, look in this directory, it'll show you the files, and you can say how you want to change them. So you can change the case of the files, so useful if you've got a load of uppercase files you want to lowercase, or vice versa. You can insert or delete little bits based on a regular expression almost, so if you've got the same characters in each of the files, you can get rid of those, replace or remove things, or do numerical file renaming as well. So I find it really useful when I'm doing a bunch of photographs for a client.
Funny that.
Yeah. Well, because the camera spits out, BA63Q5779, for the next 7,000 images or something, each with an incremental file name in it. And I might only pick 400 or 500 of those to give to somebody from 2,000 images. So I want to put them all in a directory and then rename them numerically to whatever the client's name is, 1.jpg, 2.jpg, and all the way through. So it's makes it nice and consistent for them.
Huh.
And doesn't show how many bad photos I had to take out.
Well, that's a good point.
So don't look at it and go, well, where's 3399? I've got 3398 and 3...
Right. You know. I see.
So, yeah, really useful for that. Batch renaming of files.
Cool.
Quite cool.
Cool.
Yeah. And that's it for a GUI love this week, really, I think.
Yes.
We have your feedback. Jim Mulheron emailed us to say,
I enjoyed hearing about Mark Johnson's newly updated system with the AMD APU. I hope from time to time Mark can be encouraged to explain what he's discovering as he progresses with it. I put together a new box with AMD APU as well. I hope to get back working on it until I migrate my stuff from a legacy system. As of now, it dual boots Kubuntu 12.10, soon to be 13.04, and Windows 7.
Yes, and I think George Castro said something similar as well. He'd like to know more about your AMD APU system, Mark. So speak on.
Well, essentially, running it is like running a system with a 3D accelerated graphics card plugged into it, except it's all on one chip. So you just install the drivers.
And Intel with Sandy Bridge with the GPU on board, kind of thing.
Yes, except it's AMD.
Okay.
So it's essentially an ATI graphics card.
So does it make no difference to the end-user experience at all?
Well, it's an improved end-user experience over my previous graphics card.
Sure, but it doesn't... You still plug a cable into the back of the computer,
I've got two outputs on my motherboard rather than having two outputs on my graphics card.
Right.
And now I plug them into my monitors and I install the AMD drivers and magic happens.
Wow.
But something else which I did find out, which was really cool, it's a UEFI... system rather than a BIOS system, and I went into the GUI, in fact, that it's got. So you press delete, and instead of getting a nice blue screen and like keyboard stuff, you get a nice mouse-driven GUI. And in the footer, it says "Tomorrow's Technology Today."
Really?
Wow!
Wow! I think that you'll make Super Engineer in the IRC channel very happy with that mention.
Yes, I might try and send you a screenshot, which we can release with the show.
Awesome.
That would be awesome.
That's fantastic. Well, let us know how your adventures progress.
I will. And Mike emailed us to say,
I just finished listening to episode 7 and wanted to comment on Mozilla's new browser project. The name Servo is a tribute to the television character Tom Servo in the series Mystery Science Theatre 3000. I loved the show and the character. Unfortunately, the last new episode came out 14 years ago, and the show is not well known outside the US. So for most people, the name sounds painfully dull and mechanical. I assume, however, that the name Servo will be replaced if it ever gets released for mainstream use.
This has just clicked for me. Is this Mystery Science Theatre 3000? I've seen people mention MST3K.
Sounds about right.
Ah.
Yeah. I've never heard of it, but it with a name like that, I wish I had.
Huh. There we go.
Alan is aghast.
Yes. Phil Thompson emailed us about installing Linux on Windows OEM pre-installed machines.
Several laptops I've set up recently don't allow you to not accept Windows other than by returning the whole system to the retailer. The terms and conditions have been crafted to make Windows part of the thing that you've bought contractually, and hence the option is not there to try to recover the cost of Windows. It may not have been tested in the courts yet, but it was never straightforward to get a refund, and the current terms seem to make it harder still. Do you know of any recent examples of people getting refunds for unused Windows OEM pre-installs?
Nope.
But if you don't want Windows and you want to save money, you could always build your own computer. It's a lot cheaper.
Would you recommend an AMD APU-based system?
In fact, I think I would.
All right.
Yes. What about laptops, though?
Yeah.
3D print yourself a case on a rep wrap.
Yes, that sounds like a good plan. I just got to read you this bit of awesomeness from the Mysteries Arts Theatre 3000 Wikipedia page. The series features a man and his robot sidekicks who are trapped on a space station by an evil scientist and forced to watch a selection of bad movies. To stay sane, the man and his robots provide a running commentary on each film, making fun of the flaws and wisecracking their way through each reel in the style of a movie theatre.
Oh, I think I've seen. Yeah, they've got. You're like looking over their shoulders, and you say, "Yes, I've seen that."
Cool. And finally, Jezra emailed us because he feels we're inappropriate.
While I enjoy listening to you, PC, there is a serious lack of ing swearing on the show. To keep the sweet, I suggest adding some expletives at random intervals. Obviously, you won't be saying or. And that's okay. There are plenty of other things that you can say that won't get you in trouble with hats that base their outrage on a 1,000-year-old invasion of England by the French. For example, you could easily say hot dog instead of yeah. Hot dog, that's some fine software.
Hot dog, what a great email.
So you did that.
I'm just grateful we got through that without slipping up anyone.
Are we going to have to give a credit to that Creative Commons buzzer sound?
Yes, guitar guy 3927.
He already had it committed
to memory.
The fact
that you know is
although we could use GP Rename to rename him to something else.
Okay.
So that was a callback.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's the end of your feedback.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that tickles, titillates, or taunts you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. We really would like to hear from you. So go on, do your duty. Keep calm and compose an email.
That's all for this episode. Thank you very much indeed for listening. You can join us on Wednesday, the 3rd of July at 1930 UTC for our next live episode. That's 8:30 in the evening for those in the UK.
How do we get that time thing wrong every single time?
It's numbers.
Reading numbers, not done that.
Yeah, indeed. It's confusing for me.
Was that
anyway.
A new get in touch thing?
There's lots of them.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I look forward to more.
Oh, I know you do. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.